pizza.
Just suddenly,
really quickly, there were technical difficulties. So yeah, if suddenly there is a cut, and then you hear loud slapping noises. Yeah.
If suddenly I sound pizza, much happier and fuller, it is because I got pizza.
If you hear what may sound like a slapping belly and that says, I am a happy little boy, yeah. That's me.
That's Big D over here.
Due to the pizza. Fucking Big D. Hi. So Tim H is back.
Tim H.
I am. I'm excited.
He's been across the pond.
Yes.
This whole time. Tell us about your London adventures.
London was great. Yeah, I went back for about 3 weeks, got to see the old gang, and you know,
who's the strongest? I know every time you guys gang. Go, yeah. You have like a strong match where you all punch each other in the head.
You have those like Dean, very long.
Dean's the strongest.
Dean is the strongest one. That's crazy. Wow.
It's probably because he's eaten the rest of them when he's consumed them. I don't know what the fuck that's been like.
I just had like deja vu when you said that too, so I felt like we momentarily just slipped into like a commonly known thing.
Dean often just eats little bits of his friend. They'll be like, hey, what are you doing? He's like, I don't know.
Just getting stronger.
Just absorbing their power.
What, Dean? Yeah.
I didn't do that thing that I do. Welcome to Reasonable Beef.
There it is.
I am Tim E. Kish, your host. I'm joined by...
Oh, hey, I'm Dom.
It's Dom, as always. And yeah, Tim H is in the my room.
You don't get to say your own name. We say your name.
It's fine. Don't worry. You got to keep me in my place.
Yeah, the main Tim.
Other Tim is here.
But also a reoccurring guest. So, we need to distinguish this shit.
You're the sub Tim.
Yeah.
But I mean, I guess you are a main Tim. Sure. I don't know. We have two.
Actually, I guess that's true. Mm-hmm. Take what you can get there, Tim H. So, hey, yeah,
great
we're
comedy.
Back again.
This is why we have to do long lead-ins, because it's just
comedy
like,
we're not banter.
Funny. We've been talking for like 45 minutes. We're just not funny.
As soon as you click that button, everyone starts to smile and look at each other, and it's like,
who's going to bring it?
Who's going to say the funny thing?
Are we funny?
Okay.
Oh, fuck.
Today's episode is on La La Land, a.k.a. White People Control the Universe.
Come on.
My favorite.
Yes, we're back with La La Land, the sci-fi fantasy extravagant that you know us for.
Yes, we did La La Land. Damien Chazelle, best known for Whiplash, 2014 movie. And this is, I think we can agree, this is Damien Chazelle basically like swinging his dick, right? He just made this big movie, right, for very little money. And the studios just let him do whatever he wants. That's how I viewed this. And some people are like,
it feels like he was allowed to kind of just do his thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, although the story is that for like he wanted to do this. Mm-hmm. He'd been wanting to get this off the ground for about 6 years.
Before
Whiplash. And then did Whiplash. Because that was a more producible sort of like first movie that he could get made. Sure. And then he used all the momentum from that to be like, all right, can I do La La Land now?
I'll bring it up again. I think I've said it before even on this. It blows my mind. He won Best Adapted Screenplay for Whiplash because he wrote the feature for Whiplash, wanted to get money to make the movie. So he did the short and then... Technically, the feature that got made was based on his own short
amazing.
To make the feature, so he won for Best Adapted.
Yeah, I think he's nominated. I don't think he won.
No, he won. He won for Best Adapted Screenplay. On
Who can bring Damien Chazelle's vision to life like Damien Chazelle? He really killed it. Did
quite
a great
an adaptation
job.
There.
And Whiplash is such. It was a very produced movie. I think it's like set in three things. Like there's three sets in that whole movie,
and they shot it in like 18 days or something.
It's like, what are you going to do next? It's like, it's set in the whole city of Los Angeles. They go to space. It's in the future. It's going to be all kinds of. That's how Damien Chazelle speaks, I guess. But I mean, this is the gayest movie of all time, right? Like, it's up there where he's just like, I'm going to do a musical about Los Angeles. And it's, I don't know. That was my biggest beef with this is how insular it is. And how, so this just swept the Golden Globes. We're recording this on the 10th of January. And it just annihilated. Like, it won the most Golden Globes of any movie. I think it won every single thing it was nominated for.
Yep.
It's not that good. I liked it.
It's we've talked about this before too, and Tim and I have already had this conversation where it's like it's almost annoying that it's because it's unavoidable when something gets so much positivity thrown at it. It's so hard to then go and watch it and say, but really, because
Of
course you do. You go in and you say, really.
Yeah. Well, also, like I think, and here's the thing: like this stuff gets worse. I don't know. I'm theorizing, actually, because I'm sure that, like, things that we now consider just, you know, universally acclaimed or successes. I'm sure they were more polarized in their times, you know what I mean? Like,
but
it's that strange thing where, like, I don't know whether it's like our sort of internet, everything's either the best thing ever or the worst thing ever culture, but there's this weird thing, like, soon as Birdman won that fucking Oscar, it's overrated, it's not that great, it's just gimmicky, the one take thing, like, and it's that weird thing where, like, before the Oscar, everyone was like, it's cool, it's well made, it's got the one take thing going on. Soon as it fucking wins, like, it's overrated. I wanted this.
They have the concept, like, when something is given the title of the best, you know what I mean? Like, best original picture, where it's just like, it's not the best. It's it's not. It's what 12 old white dudes think is the best. Well, yeah, what that really means.
You know, is it Seinfeld? Like, was it him who said that, like, he was once introduced as, like, the funniest comedian of all time, and he got fucking mad at, like, the person who introduced him that way, right?
Yeah, setting expectation. Yeah.
What was fun? Speaking of, like, things in their time being more polarizing than you even realize. I mean, I just, here we go. How long do we make it before I brought up Spider-Man? I was looking at something about the Danny Elfman and Sam Raimi feud or whatever, and there was a forum post that I came across from, like, 2005, I think. And Spider-Man 3 was going to happen, but they were saying, oh, Danny Elfman's not doing the music. And it was weird. There was this whole string of comments in the forum saying, like, oh, thank God, maybe now we'll actually get a good score and we'll get, you know, it won't just be Beetle Batman juice, whatever they got. And it's like, that's crazy, because now you think about that score as such a wholesome, good.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it's iconic.
And I also believe it was because Elfman was losing his hearing at the time. I don't think it had anything to do with, like, he was going deaf in, like, 2006, right? That was his issue?
No. What do you mean with the Sam Raimi thing?
No. Well, like with composing, like in the late 2000s, I thought he was having issues with his hearing.
He just got hyper, like, sensitive about it. It was like, I don't do anything without earplugs now because I did irreparable damage to my ears. But
so he's just being a little bitch the whole time.
He's just being a little bitch.
It's in a typical Danny Elfman.
Oingo Boingo days,
but,
really.
But I think also, like, by the way, leading all that back, though, because I think that's a good point of, like, exactly, like, we now kind of look at that as just, like, a good score, but, like, in its time, whatever. And here's the thing, like, people owning, if you have an opinion that differs from, you know, if a lot of people liked something and you didn't, that's fine. I do think there's this strange, like, joy that a lot of people get out of, like,
being a contrarian.
Well, that, and, like, that's always existed, right? Like, being a hipster or like, a contrarian. But, like, I suppose there's now this sort of, like, I'm cool with whatever your opinion is, no matter how popular the thing is, because I have a few contrarian opinions myself. We all do, I'm sure.
Right, of course.
But there's this strange thing that happens sometimes when people like to sort of add a little flair of, like, oh, you're all sheep, and I'm smart because I've seen what's wrong with it, and once you hear my arguments,
I'm woke.
Like, yeah, and it's like one of those
shitty movies.
Yeah, right. Exactly, and it's like one of those things where I'm like, once that gets into it, it starts to bother me.
Yeah,
you know
of course.
What I mean? Like, because it's that strange thing where I'm like, I don't know. And, like, with this movie, I'm at a point now where I'm like, I had a really, like, I sincerely really like it, but I can already tell that, like, both sides are going to annoy me a little bit. Like, people who are pretending it's the best thing since, you know, since sliced bread or whatever, I think to myself, like, I mean, it is just, it's a musical and a rom-com. Like, and it's funny because you get sort of, now you're going to have, like, guys, sort of pretentious RT film student guys who are like, yeah, I don't usually like musicals or rom-coms, but I like this because it's like an elevated version of the genre that, like, we're allowed to enjoy because it's getting all this acclaim. But it's like, it's just like the others,
the beats
of a rom-com and what, and here's the thing. That's me defending your average rom-com, not tearing down love.
Oh yeah, no, Tim Mason, man,
we love musicals.
I'm an advocate for the rom-com.
Absolutely. Well, so that's a, like, good preference. I would like to, because I want to spin off into that. We'll talk about the film itself, because like, we'll get back to this.
Yeah.
But I mean, inherently, this is all hearsay, and I mean, the opposite side of that, if I don't like musicals, is the people who are like, this isn't even a real musical.
It's
Where's the 10-minute reprise theme where they pantomime, like, looking for themselves? It's like, musical theater can get pretty obnoxious at times. Like, it doesn't need a big Fosse, like, dance number.
And also when people, because for instance, when people, like, I saw a tweet, right, like, which was someone saying, like, It was something like, oh, a white Harvard grad makes a movie about two white people discovering jazz and everyone's surprised that it got made or something. To which I was like, okay, that's, like, it's a little whatever point taken, but, like, yeah, he spent 6 years trying to get it made. They don't just hand out.
No, this is not a surefire.
And also, like, they don't just hand out movies to white people who graduate from Harvard. Like, as much as like,
I don't know.
It's like, and also, here's the thing. Getting a movie made where, like, sure, if it was an adaptation of something, sure, but, like, original musical, like, for, like, a, you know, like, I'm
it's
saying...
Bonkers. Yeah, it's bonkers.
Yeah, and today, it's like, him swinging his big dick after coming off of Whiplash. Yeah, and a hugely lighted movie.
And also, like, to make Whiplash first and then put all that momentum into make... Like, I'm just saying, like, it's that weird thing where it's, like, it's sometimes, like, Bo Burnham has a really good point about it. It's tweets like that, right, that make some... that sort of alienate...
Right.
People, I think, because you get that weird thing where, like, Bo Burnham makes this really great point about, like, if you rag about nothing but white privilege, that you're going to get, like, a white person who's, like, struggling to pay their bills and, like, is saddled with student debt going, fuck you. Like, and it's that weird thing where it's like, yes, sure, it's not, like, a total miracle that it got made, but it required someone to be like fucking hungry to get this musical made in this time.
It's like implying that it was. It's always insane to imply anything is easy ever.
Yeah, getting any movie made is tough.
Especially movies, like, to imply that was a just smooth sailing for them.
Yeah.
That's like bonkers. You still have to be good. Like, I don't know.
It is, but it's still like. But I totally understand the connotation around it.
Absolutely, yeah.
I think one of the issues comes from, like, when you're a righty, right, you're conservative, typically the cool thing about being conservative is that, like, other conservatives agree with you, like, often. There's no competition to be more right. Like, at a certain point, you become, like, a fascist and everyone hates you. Whereas I feel like on the left, there is this big push to, like, always have the hottest, newest, most left, most woke take.
Yeah,
where it's need to be... It's like, everyone in this... Why does everyone have all their fingers in this movie? I didn't see anyone with three fingers in this movie. This is bullshit. It's just like... Obviously, that's a ridiculous comparison since we're talking about just, like, black people being in the movie.
Yeah,
the only scene featuring black people is him going, like, hey, see those guys? They do jazz. I stole it from them. He's just like, see those old black guys? They're going to die and no one cares. But me, I'm going to open a club. I do... Okay, sorry. Spit off.
No,
The movie. Back to the film itself.
Yeah, I think that I was... just to wrap up that point, though, I definitely understand where that's coming from, because it is... It's the same thing of going in to see something when everybody says it's amazing. I don't know what it is as a human or as, like, a creative human, where you definitely... You feel the need to measure it.
Yeah.
I don't know why. It's like a very selfish thing that you don't want to let people like it as much as they are, because you don't, like, you know what I mean? You want to be like, all right, well, hold on.
Sure.
And it's that in a similar, obviously in maybe a more, like, political way, in that thing where all these people are loving it. So it's like, okay, well, hold on. It's not that much of a miracle this thing got made. Like, it's not outrageous.
Absolutely.
Because it isn't. And I understand it at that point, too. But
It's a balancing act. It's exactly what you're talking about. It's like, on the one hand, like, getting it made wouldn't have been easy, and it required someone to, like, work at it really hard. But at the same time, yes, don't create some kind of narrative around it where, indeed, like, how in God's name did this get made?
Right.
Like, to be honest, like, you know, like, that's the kind of story you should leave for, you know, apparently Silence or whatever, like Martin Scorsese, like the only person who can get a movie made about, you know, 3 hours of Christians being tortured and Yeah, that's a miracle that exists.
Yeah, like, come on. Yeah, right.
Okay, so the movie itself. I have a couple points written down. So, like, some of the criticisms that I have heard from... Fuck criticisms. The movie itself. Here's what Tim thinks of the movie. It was sweet. The tunes stuck with me a little bit more than I thought they would. I thought some of the composition was, like, simplistic. And I was just like, oh, that just seems like a kind of thing that, like, a student would write. And then the more I listened to it, the more I realized it is kind of... It's just pure theater schmaltz. It's good. My biggest issue with the musical portions of this, Emma Stone recorded live on set. Actresses weren't. Did we notice this?
Yeah, in the first
and every other scene. Like, well, first of all, the whole first sequence, no one is singing. Everyone is mouthing all of their things, and it bugged me the whole time.
Yeah.
I was just like, oh, this is...
It's a weird thing.
It's not like this.
Point to be made, too, in that in our post Les Mis, you know, film world.
Yes, exactly.
Where you had it look, and you're like, oh, yeah, that's definitely them singing. Oh, that's Anne Hathaway singing. It was weird, again, when you see people lip sync. Even in TV and stuff. I'm like, oh, I thought we were done with that, where you can hear the transition from studio recording stuff to... Sure, it's still
an impossible thing to record. Like, how do you mic all of those extras? And, like, even if you do record them really singing on set, when they record it actually in the studio, they need to be hitting, like, mouth perfect. They need to be perfect looking or else it's going to look super weird. So that's still, like, a main challenge of doing a musical on film, and it's still weird every time I see it. Like, you could just, there's, for those who don't know, there, you can kind of tell when someone isn't really singing. It's like something like a throat vibration. That's why when we recorded Decked back in the day, if you know anything, like, that is us actually singing on it. And I think we dubbed the music in later, right? Or is it the
same
tracks?
We did it a little weird. We sung it on set.
What I'm saying is this movie should have been more like Decked. What is he thinking?
Obviously. But that's what we're getting.
So what did you think of the film, like...
The music?
Yeah.
I really like the movie. I mean, this was hitting all those big hooky things that I fucking love. Absolutely. And I liked... I think I liked all the lyrics and everything, and I kind of wasn't... I sort of was missing stuff. Sometimes I tend to just listen to, like, the melody of the stuff and the arrangement and kind of even forget that they're singing about, like, a thing. And this time I felt very present about what they were singing about. And I love the song of, like... This would be perfect if it wasn't me and you. Like that, the love song. I'm like, right, it's right.
Yeah, yeah.
One thing I noticed about the music, and so this is saying I loved it, and this isn't even necessarily a negative thing, it's something I noticed, was there's a lot of the same chord progression. And not in a motif way. So, because when it's a motif, when it's a theme, when we're bringing up a theme, we know it's very obvious. When it's like, oh, it's the whatever, Sebastian.
They do replay the theme of the lovers.
Yeah, yeah.
So Sebastian much in this movie.
Yeah, whatever.
Almost to the point of like ad nauseum, where it's like, okay, Jesus.
Which is
that
fun.
Is the fourth reprise.
I never get sick of repeated themes. I love that shit, because to me,
It's also a somewhat old-fashioned technique. Like, actually, if you look at, like, certain, like, I don't know, Woody Allen films or whatever, like if you look at, like, Midnight in Paris or that's like a fairly recent film, but it's by an older filmmaker.
Right.
Like, you notice actually that they, that they use, Star Wars, exactly. Like, you know, like, how come the Imperial March is so memorable? Is it just because the tune's really memorable? Or is it because if you rewatch Empire Strikes Back, it's like,
it's every time.
We cut to them, it's the same thing. And it's like, you know, the criticism of it can be they're using the same thing every time, but the positive is, my God, it, like, you association, and it becomes like part of your brain.
My favorite motif of all time is every time it cuts to Buckingham Palace in any movie, it's always dun, 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 it's constantly playing over there. Yep. They just have it on all the loudspeakers.
Yeah,
everywhere.
Yeah. And then the follow up is every time we're in America.
Yeah, it's just like,
yeah, it's just snare drum.
Yeah, exactly. It's always a snare drum and like,
sir.
Yeah, guy walking down the Pentagon.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
The word sir is the audio motif.
But,
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, I liked it a lot. And like I was saying, though, like, I noticed a lot of the same chord progression. I wish I knew music theory thing where people do, like, the numbers, because I could tell you what it is right now. But it's like, it's the equivalent of doing an F major, a G major, and then a C major. Does it for the dun, 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 dun. It does it in the first song. It does it in the next song.
Yeah.
It does it in the Lovely Night song. Now, here's the thing. I love that, because those are the hookiest of chords.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm all for it.
Well, it's designed to stick in your head almost, right?
Yeah.
Where those are the chords.
Just, dude, it's
That's why it's called a hook.
I love those big fucking horns, and I don't know what it exactly is about the layering of horns doing, like, the melody to something, but it does sound
old. Well, it's all hopeful.
It's good.
It's nothing but, like, potential, where it's this swell moment of, like, it's my time. And can we talk about how the point of this movie is you don't get love and also success? You know what I mean? Not allowed.
Yes, there's
to choose.
Yes.
It's a good movie to, like, you know, it's a date movie where you're subtly implying to your date, like, it's not going to last forever.
In L.A., in a theater full of people in L.A., everybody's up there, like, looking, being like, shit.
Well, when I saw this with my girlfriend, and I'm sitting there and I'm going, like, please don't let her take it like this. And we end this movie, and we're both on the same page. We're like, they're both assholes. Like, he could have makes the decision for her.
I'm
like, you need to go 100% in France. That's why I'm never going to see you again.
Yeah, although I do think... It's weird, because I think I agree in the sense that, okay, so as...
No, he's sweet.
Like, as a story, like, as, you know, as far as stories go, like, to be honest, like, you know, you films usually, because they're sort of grander stories that teach us something about life, yeah. tend to have ultimatums that aren't real, right? Sure. Like the story about the guy who wants that fucking promotion and wants to become the CEO, but by the end of the movie realizes that the most important thing to him is his family.
Is being Santa Claus.
Like, yeah, or sure, is being Santa Claus. But like, right? Like want versus need, right? They want that promotion, but they want financial success, but the most important thing is family or whatever. And then, to be honest, is that ultimatum necessarily true in life? Like, is there not is there not a version in which you can have both?
No.
Like, right?
You know what kills
me? But then here's the thing. Yeah, but like, I guess what I'm just getting at is like, the movie presents it as an ultimatum, but it does. But to me, that works in like the larger point about sometimes you might sacrifice something for, you know.
The thing that kills me is every time you see that in a movie, like you're sitting in the theater and it's like, oh, that executive chose his family over that big raise. That movie was made by executives who did the opposite.
It's always on deck. The whole thing's about how he gets too obsessed with the Christmas stuff and misses out on his family. I was making that movie until Christmas Day nighttime.
Yes.
And hadn't spent no time with my family that year. But
something I did want to mention is that I did think that the musical portion of it is the backseat thing. I mean, when this is advertised as a musical, I wouldn't really quite call it that. I would say that it is like a drama rom-com with musical elements. And what I was just trying to think about, like, all right, let's think critically, like what could he have gone for? The thing I kind of put together was that people are just kind of doing the song and dance.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like it's LA. So everyone is doing literally the song and dance. Like everyone in the city is.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that speaks to casting, Emma Stone and Justin Timberlake.
Yeah.
Who's it?
Ryan Gosling.
Matt
Damon.
Who are you going for? Ryan Gosling, who are not, singers or dancers,
mm-hmm.
you know, sure. or piano players, but right. for that's, you know, they're playing a part. I don't know. Did you guys hear the initial? He wanted Emma Watson and Miles Teller.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which would have been a
totally different
interesting
thing.
Movie. I don't.
I can't. I think it would have been fine. Sure. I think it would have felt very similar.
But anyway,
honestly. But anyway.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry. Back to the. Did anyone else feel the Emma Stone, Ryan Gosling chemistry waning in this movie? Did anyone feel that? Because I kind of didn't. I don't know. I didn't feel it.
I didn't question it. So I don't know what that says. Like, sure. I just kind of was, you know, I was just accepting it. I don't know if I was necessarily like, you know, Emma Stone and Andrew Garfield in Spider-Man where I was like, oh, this is just nice to watch. I like them. But I don't know. Yeah, I wasn't pulled out of it.
Yeah, same.
I wasn't pulled out of it at all. Yeah, I don't know. I have a thing about like the songs themselves and like, it's that thing of, I was saying, okay, are we, and I know the answer is no, but are we on now the brink of, so this was a movie that did the musical thing, and a big part of why the movie is the movie it is because it's doing the musical thing. It's not necessarily about we wanted to tell a story and then we're augmenting what's happening to these people with songs. A huge part, you can't get over it. The whole thing is, oh, it's old Hollywood. We're doing the Hollywood musical thing.
Yeah. I didn't get that. Didn't get the old Hollywood at all. No. I think that it's an adaptation of that old idea of doing that. But this doesn't seem to be like a love letter to old Hollywood musicals.
Really?
This just seems to be like kind of literally taking that idea, like the motif of an old musical, and layering it over just a regular modern movie.
The way it's orchestrated, the way they do the dance thing and the way it's shot when they're doing the tap dance.
Only when they're dancing.
And the way they're doing.
And every other time is shot like a totally traditional drama movie.
Well, yeah, but that's what I'm saying. So the musical bits stick out as, yeah, we're doing that thing, right?
Okay.
They didn't necessarily. I don't know. I'm trying to like think of how to really say what I'm saying here. Is they're doing a thing and it doesn't necessarily feel organic to the movie that it was because it's a thing. If that makes sense.
Sure. Yeah.
So it's like, are we going to get another movie where it maybe feels a little more organic to like what's actually happening in the movie, and we're not just doing this callback thing every time they sing and dance? Like,
yeah, I don't think we're going to see another movie.
I don't think so either. I mean, like I said, I knew the answer is no, but
I saw a great tweet where it's just like, yeah, we've seen the artist Argo, Hugo, and this, like we get that movies are magical and that, you know, whatever. And it's the same thing where it's just, what was it? The artist a couple of years ago where it's like, oh, it's black and white. Like that was its, It's shtick. Like, we didn't see a lot of black and white movies after that. It was just like...
Yeah, yeah. No, absolutely. I mean, it, and also, you know, like, I do think... I think there's absolutely a valid sort of introspection to be done in, like, all right, look, there's a lot of Hollywood celebrating Hollywood stuff, and it tends to do well at award season. Like, mm-hmm. you can even go to Hugo or whatever. Like, you know,
right.
like... there's a lot of it. So, you know, I mean, Birdman is about creative people. Right? Yeah, yeah. Like there's, and I think it's absolutely worth, you know, although I tend to think that kind of political stuff, just like the whiteness in this versus whatever. Like, I always think those are criticisms that like are, and conversations that need to be had. And they're so like important to have, mm-hmm. but I do think they somewhat intersect with, is the movie any good? But I also yeah. think, they kind of are separate conversations. Like, so for instance, like, sure, it's another movie with two, like, straight white like, actors
yeah, yeah.
Right. falling in love. And, like, in a larger conversation in the political world we're in now, like, could it, is it important that we tell more diverse stories? Like, absolutely. And that we recognize more of them? Absolutely. It shouldn't detract from, is this movie good?
Those right? are like the two parts of our like, brains in a way. Like yeah, the yeah. person who lives in the world and then like the absolute like shut in artist who just wants to make stuff and like look at stuff and pick
well,
it so, apart.
Yeah, yeah. Well, man. It's about, because I always point to, it's a weird example of it, but like I always point to like, like the example of this I always use with the politics and the movie, like Dawn of the Planet of the Apes is a really fucking good movie. Does it have enough? Does it have enough female characters in it? No, like
yeah,
and that's a valid criticism of that movie. I would still give it a fucking 9 out of 10. Like it's yeah. so fucking good, but like,
right.
and I wouldn't necessarily detract a point because I think the movie works
right
in its form and how it's presented. But like, if someone points out, you know, there's only like one real female character in it and she's not really well defined, I'd be right. like, yeah, that's fair. Like, you know what I mean? Yeah. It's that weird thing where like you have to sort
this
of
this is a weird time too.
You have to be able to love something and also admit its flaws, I guess, right? Like
yeah. but you do have to watch what time it is, because we are literally coming off of Donald Trump being elected president, mm-hmm. and then the whitest movie ever made sweeping the Golden Globes. And right. it's just like they're not connected at all.
Mm-hmm. It's bad timing for
but
that.
Yeah, it's just like,
well, it kind of fucking shit. This is, and I'm gonna sound super naive and just innocent right now. It didn't occur, and I haven't been on Facebook, I haven't been on Twitter, like I'm just generally speaking have not been on those for months. So when I saw, it was about a week ago, I saw, or not even, it was a couple days ago, I saw someone post something about like, wow, it's a bummer that, you know, I saw La La Land, and it's a bummer that to think that someone who looked like me, who lives in LA and who has lived in LA my whole life, would have been just like a background actor in this story about like LA and yeah. blah, blah, blah. And it's like, oh shit. It, not yeah. until that moment, I hadn't even thought about how fucking white and norm, like, you know, like the
to
same
come,
thing.
To come to
doing,
LA.
We're doing that same movie thing again, and here it is. And it didn't even cross my mind.
Yeah. I mean, it's weird because it's a shame that now the conversation is being framed as sort of like, it's Moonlight, the black movie, versus La La Land, the white movie, which yeah. is that, and that
yeah,
begins
that's
to,
harmful. For
and
sure.
I agree, and I agree, and I don't think that's a productive way to think about it. No. Like because also, you know, like for instance, there was this like, again, it's such a like nuanced conversation, and it's even hard to like convey it here in this conversation we're having. I saw a tweet where someone was like, there is no way that La La Land is better directed than Moonlight or something, to which I'm like, I've seen both. Like, I can be the ultimate hipster for Moonlight in that I read the script 2 years ago. So like, oh, you like that movie? You like that movie? I liked it when it was a script.
Yeah, swing that dick.
Like, exactly. I can be a douche about that movie. And here's the funny thing, though, is like, I don't know, like La La Land, as someone who is an aspiring like director and like as being in film school for 5 years or whatever, it's like, yeah, it's not, that wasn't easy. Like no, there was a lot of commitment to craft and filmmaking to get La La, like from a staging point of view, from a directing performances point of view. Now I'm not saying that Moonlight wasn't that. Moonlight is also very, very accomplished, but it's that strange thing where it's like, they're both so radically different. And so you're getting to this point where like the craft conversation is
we're back on The Force Awakens again, where yeah. it's the the fallacy of that because it looks like something we're very familiar with, and because it's hitting all of these visual cues we've seen before, it was easy to do it.
Right.
Like, oh, it was so easy to make it look like an old Star Wars. Like, get the fuck out of here. Do you have any idea how insane it must have been to craft something that looks like Star Wars? Like,
absolutely.
And same thing with this. It's like, do you have any...
It's almost harder. Like, to conceptualize something new is way easier than doing a pastiche of something
old. And also, in those two...
I don't know if I go that far, but it's like,
not a copy, a pastiche, where you're literally taking, like, what makes this thing this? Let me distill it and then try and make something that would fit in this universe. Right. It's the Owen Coffer fucking Hitchhiker's Guide thing, where it's just like, he could have never worked it. He wrote the last Hitchhiker's Guide book when Douglas Adams died. You're looking at me like I'm fucking insane.
I don't understand that.
But, so Douglas Adams wrote this book called Hitchhiker's Guide of the Galaxy. Right. His wife gave the estate to this guy, Owen Coffer, who wrote the Artemis Fowl books. Oh. And he wrote the sixth one, and everyone hated it. And it's just like, that's tough to take like a fully realized universe, like sci-fi universe, like Star Wars or Hitchhiker's Guide, and really develop into it. That is tough.
Yeah. So as a musical, to do the musical thing, to make a movie that looks like something that feels classic, and the colors are things that make us remind us of old movies, and the songs remind us of old, like...
Yeah, yeah. No, and also...
It's a tall order.
And also, what I'm about to say, again, it's a bit of a redundant point, but it's the sort of... You know, the craft that it takes to get Moonlight and tell that story well, such like, you know, a much more slow, like slice of life movie, you know, versus a musical, which is flowy and ongoing takes. And like,
can I talk about like, the race? Doesn't Moonlight have a racially charged aspect to it? Like,
of course
it's about his life as a black man.
Yes,
like,
of course,
like,
of course.
This movie, like to do these two movies as the white and the black movie, where it's like, this movie is literally about a black man's experience. And from an outsider's perspective, looking in, La La Land is like the white person's experience, where my life's a musical and we're dancing around Los Angeles.
But I suppose what I'm going all the way back to is like, I don't know, it like the 2010 Oscar conversation where it's like, well, how do you rate how well Inception was directed versus The Social Network or versus The King's Speech? Like,
Boyhood.
The craft that went into Inception, like, is incredible and specific. And he wasn't even nominated for Best Director that year. Like, but it's that weird thing where it's like, and it accomplished, like I wouldn't criticize The Social Network for not having a spinning, rotating hallway action scene that was well, you know, like spatially, I totally understood where the characters were the whole time. Good directing there, Nolan. Like, I'm not gonna lobby that against Fincher. Like, in this, like, so it's this strange thing where, like, I don't know, like,
you boil it down to what the criteria are to make this movie, like, best, who wins best director, who wins best film, or whatever.
Yeah,
and it really comes down to like, this is us worshiping the elites once again, where this is a group of what, 100 people, 200? I don't know Golden Globes, but the Academy Awards.
6,600.
6 million.
Even still.
Yeah.
These are Hollywood elites who are politically charged and do have interests. And like, this is a politics game.
I'm going to boil it down even further to who the fuck cares.
Exactly. And
that was
my point.
So much? Yeah, why do you have the elites to compare everything to everything? Just do a thing and let that be its thing. And intention is, this is like a film school conversation where it's like, does intention matter? Like, when whatever someone sat down to do with the movie, is that, do you have to factor that into how you take it? Like, yes and no. But like, with stuff like this, it's like, Damien was, he's off making a musical. Like,
what he wanted to do was this big
romantic
movie.
I agree. I think there's this fascinating thing that happens where, like, so basically just a kid was really passionate and wanted to make a musical. He made one, and it's a nice throwback, and it's all these things. But now it's become what we were talking about. Now suddenly it's in the same. And by the way, the director behind Moonlight, like, apparently heavily like autobiographical, like, in that, like,
which is dope.
Like,
is,
so he's drawing from his own experience, talking about like whatever. And so these two artists told stories that they'd been wanting to tell for years. They made their respective movies, and now suddenly, I don't think they consider it a...
No, probably not.
Like the same way that suddenly the public is like, again, it's the...
Absolutely. Right? Because you gotta look at their story, where Damien Chazelle, rich kid, went to Harvard, fucking made a movie, like, or he made a short film in 2009, got to make this feature film. He wasn't even 30 yet. Like, he just gets to do all this shit because he came from money. That's just like what it comes down to, is that, like, here's another rich white kid who's making a movie about being super fucking white. And that, like, if you want to reduce it to that, like, you're really, you're hurting yourself. You're doing yourself a disservice and you're not enjoying this movie, but I totally see why you would be so cynical too. I totally understand why
you'd be cynical. What's the solution? Like, so here's then the thing. Okay, so what's the solution? Because it's like, it's, and not it's that, because, I mean, yeah. Here's the thing. Family did not come from money at all.
Yeah, kill the rich is the solution.
Family is, you know, doesn't make any money, but I am now like a young white dude who's trying to be making movies and stuff. And you start to see this kind of happen and this backlash and this criticism. It's like, so what I take from that is like, okay, then I now have a responsibility in the casting, in the kinds of stories or whatever it is. I got to let go of 1977. You know what I mean? And I got to like not just do these Nickelodeon movies that I wanted to do where it's just like some little white boy in the thing and like, okay, so why, you know,
yeah,
change it that way. But the thing is, you also don't want to have the thing where then you feel guilty for getting an opportunity when it looks like from the outside another white guy making another movie.
Yeah.
And it's like, so then how do you take the opportunity and the privilege and feeling grateful for what you got for that and then like shift it into like, is that then making money and being like,
sure.
All right. Well, now I, you know,
at the end of the day, no one's going to compromise their dream because of white guilt. Like no one's going to be like, I'm not going to.
It's just a bummer to like get framed that way when it's like,
absolutely.
Again, and Damien Chazelle, you know, I'm sorry, what's the Moonlight director's name?
Barry Jenkins, I think.
Mm-hmm. They were both on a path of, I want to tell a story. And then it's just like, unfortunately, as genuine as Damien Chazelle has been in his thing, almost to the fault of him being so genuine and sincere about it, it now just seems like some fucking white kid doing a thing.
The way you fix that is you don't, like, politics has to fix that. Like, just the general attitude of society needs to change and things need to become more equal, but, and we all need, like, the world just needs to be happier in order for it to change.
But it's also dangerous for another person who wants to do this. Like, so it's funny. Like, I see this now and I almost ingested this as like, oh, doi, again, when you're sitting down and you're thinking about the movie, like, let's maybe not cast two of the beautiful white Hollywood actors in, like, you know what I mean? And it's like, so, okay, so that's lesson learned. Don't do that. We've seen it now. And that's the other part of it is like, that's something I've been having a hard time getting a hold of is like, why do this again? We got it. We have so many of it.
But that's the business decision where it's like, because we have so much of it, we have data that shows that these movies make money. And it's like, and that's the, when you want to approach a studio and you want to be like, look, I think it's really valuable if you put people of color as the leads of your film, they'll be like, we agree with you. Most people don't.
Well, Rogue One is doing it for us.
Absolutely.
Force Awakens is doing it for us.
Oh, and let me clarify.
You mean the anti-Trump movie? That,
yeah. right.
Let me clarify. I don't believe that at all. I'm a very firm advocate for diversity in movies, but I know for a fact, like, that's why they cast Scarlett Johansson and not the other girl that they had up for the one who was in the Wolverine.
I didn't even know that was a thing. I just thought she got cast and there wasn't even a contest.
No, but there was like a big fan push for this other person. They're like, no, we're doing this person that we know can kick ass. And
it's
because Salt did so well. Fuck Hollywood, dude. Fuck this whole town.
I forget what I was going to say. It's like the data thing is such a bummer.
Yeah, because
it's like
they won't have new data points unless they start taking some risks. But it's hard to ask somebody to take a $80 million, $50 million, $20 million risk.
Right.
That's a tall order.
Oh yeah, like I mean, I can't.
But it shouldn't be thought of even as a risk. That's why it's like. And so Wonder Woman.
It's also funny. This is what Rainbow Hair was talking about a couple months ago, and people tore him apart. For as much as I think Max Landis is a huge douchebag, like people were dreaming him for it when he was like, "Look, this is how movies happen." And it's like, this movie would have not happened if they didn't have her name attached to it.
Yeah,
Scarlett Johansson.
I mean, it's like, I won't spoil what it is, partially because of, you know, NDAs and things. But like, for instance, I worked on a movie over, you know, November, December, and it's an indie movie sort of, you know, like set in sort of 1930s Hollywood, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's and here's the thing, like, genuinely, you know, it's really interesting being that close to an indie, like a sort of 2.5 mil, like, sort of movie. And honestly, one of the things that, like, makes me worried. Like, you know, you never know. You could always be wrong. It's one in a million. It's ultimately gambling still is what movie making is. But speaking to the bets we were talking about, it's like, I do feel a little bit bad for the investors because they haven't been able to attach like, I don't know, a Brie Larson or someone who, like, if they were in the lead of, in this movie, it gets sold and people watch it. And they've got, they're in this situation where it's like, yeah, it's a really cool story, but like, are you going to be able to sell this?
Yeah. Like, that's why and everything's getting cheaper. It's getting cheaper to make the stuff. So less pressure on make something small, make it good. Yeah. And then there's less of a risk being to quote unquote risk. And then it's like, you know,
see, one would hope. Unfortunately, that's not the way it's going
to
work.
Go back to data. I want to say this because I want to say it now. All the 12 people listening.
Hey, come on. We get 120 unique every week at least.
All right, listen, you 120s. You've heard us on this. You know, lay into the DC movies pretty hard.
You've heard us on Reasonable Beef.
You've heard us on
now,
this.
Now, for 1995, you can get our 12
You can read
collection.
Us in this, the Reasonable Beef book, where all of our opinions are immortalized in ink. Anyway, go see Wonder Woman. I am filled with doubt. So much doubt about the quality of it.
I might skip Justice League, but I'm less inclined.
Yes, guys, you gotta see Wonder Woman.
Go to Wonder Woman because unfortunately it will get boiled down. Even though you can look and say, oh, they made three, four bad movies that kind of got bad reviews kind of across the board and a lot of people don't like, and then they made Wonder Woman, and they're still, if Wonder Woman doesn't do well, they're going to look at Wonder Woman and go, oh, it's because they put a woman in it. Oh,
they will.
And it's like, no, so it's the lesson will not be learned on the quality of the movie. The lesson will be learned because it's Wonder Woman. So go see it, even if, like, you got to show up. It's for the greater good. And then if it gets bad reviews, don't go again.
And also, to be honest, like, and it's funny because... I don't know. Like it's a popular opinion where we're like, oh, whatever, like capitalism and all the like negative. But here's the thing. Capitalism would work if we put our money behind our values more often. Yeah. Like, so meaning if you don't go buy clothes that are made in sweatshops and you don't, I don't know, like, use food, like, or eat food, that is, if you don't eat food where, you know, there's a ethical issue with how they treat the animals or whatever, my point being, if you, you know, if that information is available and you can put your money where your mouth is, like, arguably, that's how capitalism would work, right? Like, because then you can reward people who are doing good things and disencourage people who are doing bad things.
The phrase "put your money where your mouth is" is literally capitalism distilled.
Yeah, but then I think that's one of the issues, though. Is like one of the problems is I don't think we do. Absolutely. Like that's this weird thing where like we, you know,
we make the same economical decisions that we shit on Hollywood execs for making all the time. Where it's like we will choose the cheaper option instead of buying clothes made in America. You know, like because I don't want to spend $60 on a T-shirt. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's the same thing that a Hollywood exec. It's like, yeah, I would love to make a movie featuring like people of color or women, but I don't want to gamble with $120 million.
Here's where let's take the road of as far as like, and it's less if the movie is still about, it's still an action movie, it's still got aliens, it's still the big fun thing that you've seen anyway. I don't understand exactly what you mean, like, but this is us being detached on the coasts, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like having not really a frame of reference of like people who were literally see a black person and say, I'm not going to see that movie.
Yeah.
Like, but I don't understand it when it's like that, when it's still the same kind of movie, but like there is a point to be made where it's, you're saying we make the same decisions where we see something that's familiar, right? We see whatever, right. something that you can rent on iTunes or whatever on Netflix, and you click that one because it sort of looks like this other thing that you like, and it doesn't look difficult. It doesn't look like it's going to challenge you as an audience member.
Yeah.
So you skip whatever foreign film, you skip whatever indie that maybe does, you know, it paints a picture. And so then it's like, so is it just that then the audience for those things that are maybe more difficult or harder to get made are it's just a smaller audience, and that's why it's harder to get it made? Because it's like, well, who is this really going to reach and blah, blah, blah? Or is it just us being a bunch of fucking slobs and not tuning in on something that would maybe elevate the fucking medium?
Like, again, to come back to something we've talked about a bazillion times before, it comes back to do with the economy of your time.
That's
where it's
very
even
true.
Like there's so much shit.
I mean, one of the things that like, honestly, what does actually excite me about this year's, you know, potential Oscar contenders, and some of the movies I'm about to mention, by the way, aren't looking like they're going to be even nominated for some of the Oscars, but like, I mean, Moonlight will be, right, which is great. Mm-hmm. Then, you know, you have Fences, and then actually most recently, like this weekend or whatever, Hidden Figures beats Star Wars at the domestic box office.
Oh, yeah.
And you know what's exciting about Hidden Figures is like, it's cool that it's a story about like black women with like no direct, like, oh, it's about slavery.
Right.
Like, you know what I mean? Like the movies that can be about the, well, yeah, the movies that can be about a black experience don't have to be slavery movies to get recognition and to be critically acclaimed. Like they like, and the same as like Moonlight is ultimately a coming of age story. Like, yes, it deals with racial inequality and like the specific experience of being, you know, like a gay black man and growing up in like a sort of, you know, like underprivileged area or whatever. Like that's great. But what's awesome about that is like, cool, we're not like, we're expanding the stories that can be told within those communities, and that stuff is exciting to me. Like the fact that like, because I do think there's sometimes something to be said about like, you know, like, yeah, you can have like one major slavery movie every X amount of years, because like people don't always want to be like, oh, it's a movie featuring a black person. It's going to be sad and about slavery. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you want to expand what the... Because well, I think...
It's the just do it argument.
And it's
put someone in it and then don't change anything else about the movie. It's just that's who then the face is.
Yeah.
And then we're done.
Because I think that's one of the things that, like, sometimes people underestimate. It's like, oh, but how come people didn't go see this? Like, how come people didn't go see this, you know, LGBTQ movie or whatever? And it's like, well, because usually they're movies about, like, people being fucking persecuted and, like, not, like, and,
there's
like, you said, if you have to choose between that and, like a sort of mainstream blockbuster where you're going to see dinosaurs, it's like, well, yeah, I'm probably going to go for it. Right? Right? But then here's the thing. It's like, well, then part of the challenge is, like, refresh what we're doing. And like you said, put...
Mm-hmm.
Unexpected choices.
So what you're saying is gay dinosaurs,
right? Yes.
Gay dinosaurs is the way forward, guys.
Finally, we got
Jurassic
there.
Park 5.
I also gay dinosaurs. I mean, we were in an interesting tangent on this for a while, but
what are we talking about?
We started with La La Land, and now we're at gay dinosaurs.
Gay dinosaurs.
I love it.
Well,
that's the working title of La La Land. Actually, it's kind of like Blue Harvest.
It's true, right?
It's gay dinosaurs.
Yeah, right. About old Hollywood. So technically, someone who would be into old Hollywood is just a gay dinosaur. But the scientist in Jurassic World, he's definitely super gay. The guy who gets away.
Brent Spiner?
The guy who steals the embryos.
And there's that deleted scene where he's gay.
I think he's off. He's cooking up some gay dinos.
Wait, who steals the... Is it B.D. Wong? Because B.D. Wong is actually gay. He's the Asian dude, right?
Yeah, he was in the old one, too. He's in the first one. I don't know his name.
Is he really? Oh, okay. Well, B.D. Wong, he plays...
He's in the one, and then he's like...
I think it is.
He's the one who says the, no, they're all female line in the first one.
That dude is, like, in his 60s. He looks amazing.
Yeah.
He's
a big gay dinosaur.
Yeah. Literally, yes. What were we talking about? Fucking La La Land.
Yeah, right. So, movie's good. It's got music and...
It's almost hard to talk about, because it's like... Yeah, it's sweet. It's like it's a good movie, there's a lot of nice choices.
I consider it. I always can like. I think it's a good movie, elevated to you know, like. And when I say great, I don't necessarily mean like 5 stars is going to go down in history as like whatever. I just mean like it goes from good to great for me, literally on the merits of its ending.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's one of those movies that like. I always compare it to Roman Holiday. Like, I don't know how familiar everyone is. Roman Holiday is.
I've been on a Roman Holiday.
I mean, it's
I have a friend, Roman Holiday.
it's an Audrey Hepburn movie from the 50s or whatever, and like, and I'm not sure if it's 50s, but either way, it's that's another example of like, it's a kind of like traditional like rom com, and it's cute, and it's like a situation in a like typical sort of American like thing. It's like in a foreign place and like like thing, but then it ends in a way that elevates it and makes it just that little bit more, because it doesn't follow the usual tropes. And I would argue La La Land is that same thing, where it's like, that movie is not as good without that final sequence.
It is like, a good sequence.
You know what? All of the dinosaurs would be gay. They're all women. And then they procreate. They're all gay.
That's
already.
Very true.
But I was going to say about
dinosaur periods.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. That's a good
I was going to say about the ending, though. It's funny. I have a slight, just, well, you know, I'm not going to let this go away without any beef. the ending sort of is almost what brought it down for me. And not because of the love story ending, but because of the career ending.
Yeah.
Now, this whole movie feels a whole lot like it's a lot of the question of, like, what if I'm just not good enough? What if it's just not going to happen? What if, you know, this is the fucking grind. I'm sick of being humiliated every single time I go in. And then they bought, everybody gets what they want.
Pretty much.
So it's like, it's that whole thing of like, oh, are we being contemporary of like, fuck, there are so many people who want to do this. What if I'm just not one of those people who gets to do it eventually? But no, you're Ryan Gosling and Emma Stone. Like, you know, you she then is the best actress.
They follow through. They follow through on her career, not his.
He opens
That's all. That's all we know.
Because that was his big dream.
No, but the last time we saw him, he's miserable playing with this band that he doesn't really love.
Yeah.
And like, we know her arc where it's like, oh, she goes to Paris, becomes a huge actress, she gets married, has a kid, whatever. All we know is that he's in this band that he hates. 5 years later, he owns a club. And it's like, I guess that was his ultimate goal,
I always feel like that's kind of the interpretation, isn't it? The ending, or like, that's what it is. It's like, they both get what they want, but they don't get each other.
Exactly. Which is fine. But that, to me, wasn't the question of the movie. The movie is they're together, and then they're questioning their life in art. It's not we're together and we're questioning can we be together because of our life in art. Like, at least that's not how I
see. I see 100% what you're saying. 100% what you're saying. It answers a question at the movie that it never quite asks.
We weren't worried about maybe a little.
Yeah, like, were they going to succeed? Like,
with the fact that he was off touring. So if we had that hot second where that was sort of the conflict of like, can they be together when he's leaving all the time? Like,
yeah.
But otherwise, they were very supportive of each other and and like, I don't know. So, yeah, it just, that was great and all. It's supposed to be sort of the dose of reality is, yeah, they don't get to be together. But like, yeah, I don't know. I think one of them should have been dead at the end. I think they should have just, their dreams shattered and he kills them. He heroin overdoses. Mm-hmm. Ryan Gosling is the one who should have died. Yeah. She can make it, but
I think like when they were flying in space, he should have just separated. And like when they come back for the fantasy, he's just not there.
And it's like, what the fuck? And it does that gravity shot of him just spinning out space. into the void. Yeah.
Lands in the, fuck. I didn't like that sequence at all.
The dance.
In space, I thought it was the worst sequence in the whole movie. I was like very frustrated with it. I'm like, this is like fucking trash.
No, I
trash.
I mean, it's weird. I would say I do agree that it's funny because I think out of like the things that people are choosing to like hop on in the movie, it's like one of the things is like, yeah, I do agree that there's a bit of a visual when it gets so heavily green screen and they go up there. Like once it's sort of silhouetted and they're dancing through, I quite like it. But that initial green screen moment to me was like, and I get it. It's like, it's still in keeping with the sort of like, it's like older movies and it's sort of heavily interpretive. But sure. I did find that it visually bugged me more than because for instance like I adore the magic hour shot like on Mulholland Drive or wherever they were and they do the tap dancing sequence wonderful and it all had I adore the opening sequence like open your LA movie in traffic like brilliant like all those things and then for some reason the sort of heavy green screen planetarium section, which I was into up until then. But I agree, when it went up there, it was a little bit like, visually this isn't...
It's visually disjointed is the issue.
Exactly.
Maybe not necessarily it feels bad.
It feels out of place.
Yeah, it's just like...
Although,
almost like he's trying to still find his voice, you know what I mean? Where it's like, he knows... Like, he did make this really big movie, but it's not visually significant.
I would say Whiplash, though, is pretty... I think that has a pretty strong... Like
visual consistent, sure.
Visually, I mean, I'm not concerned him as a director. I mean, I would never. I don't know if I think of him.
It's always funny though. Speaking of that sequence, though, like we talked about this. Like, what? Like, wasn't it wonderful watching it with an LA crowd?
And like, as soon as they drive up,
and everyone sort of says, "This
Jesus Christ!"
Yeah, there's this like communal chuckle in the audience of like, you can't drive up there.
No, I mean, I had literally just driven home from work, sat in traffic, picked my girlfriend up. We went to see the movie, and I'm like, great. No, this is the fantasy I wanted to escape to. This is great. I'm just sitting there the first 15 minutes of the movie.
Didn't you know that the whole hour and 20 minutes of the movie just took place in traffic?
Even some of the more like obvious LA jokes were like wonderful. Open that big opening sequence and winter. Yeah. Like the title and then the reoccurring joke that every time they cut to the new season it looks fucking the same.
Yeah.
Like stuff like that where like, you know, and even just like, which again, I get this stuff, the stuff I'm pointing out now, which I'm finding charming, is absolutely the
masturbatory.
Sort of, it's the circle 100%. Jerk world in Hollywood thing, which is stuff like the it's a Prius. Like, yeah. That doesn't help me. Like, whatever. Like, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's funny. Everyone in Hollywood drives a Prius. We get it. But, you know, right. Like,
how does the rest of the country see this?
I think that shit just passes under the radar.
Yeah.
They're not big enough moments. They don't take 5 minutes
to be like, what
to make a LA based. You know what? Thing,
Hollywood has always been this way about LA. Because, like, I remember thinking younger, like, LA is where things happen. And then I moved here and I'm like, oh, yeah, I guess things happen here. Things happen most places. There are verbs. I have noticed verbs.
Lots of verbs.
So speaking of like touches that like it, little things though that I then did like, which are more like they felt authentic but less LA specific and more like universal, like for instance, mm-hmm. I love the sort of she's walking in heels and she wants to change into some more comfortable shoes for the tap dancing sequence, which you can sort of read as two ways, which is she wants to be in more comfortable shoes to tap dance in, but also girls do carry around an extra pair of shoes if they're in heels at a party. Love that kind of detail. Yeah. And then that wonderful little, we've talked about this before, but like making it so endearing how like the beats of like, oh, they find her car and it's like, and it's like, oh, like, do you want to ride to your car? No, I'm parked over there. And for a second as the audience, you're like, is he blowing her off now? Like, and then, he parked right outside the party. He didn't have to walk her there. That's adorable.
Yep.
Like stuff like that where like
I didn't pick up on it.
Like it's little touches like that that like I love. Like then another a similar one that I adore is like when he drives all the way to wherever she lives.
Yeah.
And there's that little beat where she's like, you know, he has that little shout where it's like, you have to go to this audition. And then like when he's leaving,
he's that little shout.
Yeah. But then, as he drives off, and she's like, wait, how did you know where to find me? And he just goes, the house across the library. Yeah. Like, and you're just like, oh, you remember that thing. Yeah. And it's time. It's touches like that where it's like, smart. Cause it's like,
that's cute shit. Sure. Yeah. I love that stuff.
I'm still hung up on had a little shout.
We need more unrealistic expectations for romantic gestures by men who remember things. I mean, come on, ladies.
it's
you just trickling. Talk and talk, and you think we're gonna retain any of that information?
If you want to fuck with your girlfriend, remember one thing. No, it's serious. Just remember one super specific thing, like her second cat's name.
Right.
Instant points. You win. You win the whole game. Something I noticed, Ryan Gosling's wearing tap shoes this whole movie. Mm-hmm. He's always wearing when they introduce him, he's wearing tap shoes. And I like...
Be awkward at a funeral.
Sure. She's a my condolences. I'll just be awkward. and that's something that they only really showed, like, maybe 2-3 times. Like, that's just something you pick up on. Also, this movie does suffer from huge apartment syndrome, where it's like, he's like, yeah, I don't have car insurance, but my room has more than one room. That's insane. It's like his kitchen and his den are two different things.
Yeah.
What the fuck is happening here? This isn't Los Angeles.
Yeah.
And then her room is like, she has, her walls are painted. She's got like shit. I'm like, what landlord let you do that in this? Like, you are out of your mind. This anyway. Unemployed actress.
La La Land.
It was good.
Yeah. I agreed. It was good.
Yeah. And I mean, like,
I had a fun time.
I've seen it 3 times now. So like, and it's weird because I think every time I go back to it, I'm like, I like it more upon repeat viewings every time, like, because I think knowing where it's going, because of how much I like the ending, like, actually makes all the stuff leading up to it feel, like, nice. Although I think the first half hour is really strong, like, mm-hmm. everything leading up to them getting together, and, like, it's a movie that makes a really big deal out of their first kiss, and I really like it, and I think it's got a lot of, like, that. It does get a little bogged down in the middle when they have to orchestrate conflict between them. And it does feel a little bit sort of
randomly being a famous musician.
Sure. Yeah. Like they kind of
50% of the musical numbers are in the first like 20 minutes.
Yeah. So it does get bogged down a little bit in the middle and then it ends strong. So it has that little and I think that's a valid criticism of it. And I think, you know, it's weird. I keep going back to this thing where it's not like revolutionary. It's not like oh my god, how did whatever, but at the same time it's also not to be underestimated. Like, there's an incredible
as far as the like homage stuff, it definitely wasn't And I feel like I maybe have made it sound like this is how I felt about it, but I think it wasn't completely drowned in
the nostalgia,
like old stuff. And yeah, it is now LA.
No, I agree.
And even like what happens with him and
that's more of a marketing tactic. I mean, it's a movie that like ponders its own existence in a way, because obviously the whole like
how can you be a contemporary, or traditionalist?
Yeah, exactly. How can you be a revolutionary if you're too busy being a traditionalist?
That bugs the shit out of me, like, because you literally have a character just introduce his problem. You know what I mean? Where it's come on, let us get there.
And then he looks down the lens and he says, it's Damien.
Yeah, but exactly. It's like a movie, it's like, oh,
the jazz, but he's questioning the musical in itself. Oh,
And here's the thing, like, and, you know, I like that. Like, I like that it's asking that question and that it's doing that thing. And one could argue the movie, like, doesn't, it touches, it ponders its own existence, but it doesn't necessarily answer that question because, you know, is it too busy being a traditional musical or is it interesting and new enough?
Plus,
to be
he does end up as a traditionalist. He has a traditional jazz club where he plays normal ass jazz.
Yeah. Although I do like the, again, speaking of that, though, in terms of like where they kind of meet each other in the middle, like I do like this kind of subtle implied detail about like she has to learn to not like, you know, to like not get beaten down by every rejection and like whatever, and like, you know, take that next chance or whatever. And that's kind of where she winds up. Like, that's what she learns. And then for him, in a way, I do think as much as he opens his traditional club, there's a few details that I like about how he has to learn to not be too pretentious and hung up on everything. So for instance, he calls it Seb's.
Yeah, Seb's.
He doesn't do the, you know, like he has to learn to like sacrifice some of that stuff, which I do think is a nice touch. Like, I think they,
so is his name Seb in this
Sebastian
movie? Oh, right. Okay. Yeah.
Sebastian and Mia.
Seb.
Just get
Seb.
Seb.
Okay. Three-headed critic on.
Oh, great.
On,
we should sing it. We're singing it. We're singing it. Okay. Bucks.
Oh, man. I'm like, I'm
dude,
too ill
get
to do
on
this.
Board.
I think
nothing.
I'm like, I have to end that?
No. Well, we
no.
You haven't
keep
been
going.
Here. Oh, you haven't been here for the new rules. It keeps going.
We keep going until we're
a complete.
Oh, fuck. I thought we. Okay.
Well,
that
welcome back.
Everything.
New
that's
year, new beef.
Yeah, I was gonna say that's changed. That's not me being weird.
No. That wasn't you messing up. Okay,
that's just you not caring and listening to the new episodes.
Oh, great.
Okay.
Should I do a new one or
the? I'm just gonna give you like a fucking one syllable word, no matter what.
A good time.
That's it. It's a good time. I think that's appropriate.
Glad we stopped to explain the new rules.
I wind up doing three.
All right, everyone, we've got a Patreon.
You know, my aunt used to have a Patreon.
Oh yeah, did she?
Yeah. This wound up being
just
so
tell
much.
Us a story, Tim.
I remember she used to come home and she would tell us stories about how she had I don't know, like someone really cool on her podcast. And she guessed it on Marin once.
Yeah.
Spoke without thinking.
Hang on, I think I wrote
oh yeah.
Here we are.
Here's to reasonable beef, despite dubious mic quality. Yeah,
too true.
Here's to chatting with friends. Give it to our Patreon, please.
It's wool.
Man.
Is that not in this fight song? It's wool. Yeah.
I don't get it.
It's when he sings, and though you look so cute in your polyester suit,
it's wool.
I just imagine just like every line in this movie.
It's wool.
It's wool. It's wool, bro.
Jesus,
you've got that
so much.
It's wool.
So much of this wound up being like this extended like political conversation and
bookended.
But like,
by...
I mean, there is a part of me though that like, because I loved all the like changes of stage lighting and stuff or whatever that they did in it.
Yeah.
There is a part of me.
Yeah.
There is a part of me though that like, I do love the idea of the like. Yeah, just like tell us a story, and she does that entire song.
My aunt is a gay dinosaur.
Like, and then she does that entire song, and it goes all the way back. And then they're just like, "Hey, that's great." But
that was a song.
Yeah, we have to. We have to tell you a story. Like, you like,
was that like, were we supposed to know what?
I mean, if you really think about it, the first part of it is a story, and then the rest of it is just like, here's to the dreamers. They're probably sitting there like, what the fuck? That's is
like,
going
so break
on?
It down outside of the music. Like, if she wasn't singing,
yes, absolutely. Like, the lyrics are also not a story.
She jumped into the water, and she said that she didn't. She didn't regret it, and I say, if you are to create art, create!
Yeah. Thanks, guys. Thank you for joining us. Reasonable Beef, please give to our Patreon, www.patreon.com/reasonablebeef. I promise. Things will be up soon. We'll be up by the end of the month of what you get. Gonna do, like, movie live commentaries and other fucking cool...
Great.
Meat bullshit. Please give it our Patreon. Make shit happen.
Yes, well.
Thank you, Tim H., for joining us in the hole.
Happy to be back. 2017. We want to do a bunch of these.
Yeah. We will. I want to have you on a Defenders of the Rotten. That might be a fun one.
I don't even know.
I'll explain off mic. Thanks, guys. Thanks for listening. Have a wonderful night.